The expulsions and exterminations of the East Germans, part 5, the Brünn Death March. There are many German and Austrian towns throughout the history books that have faded away into dust. We try to find them on a map, but cannot. Brünn, since renamed Brno, is such a place. And we'll start with a bit of background on it. The population before the purge. Brünn, home of Gregor Mendel, the father of modern genetics, was originally the site of a Celtic settlement. Its origins go back to a castle founded around 1021, and an early document mentions the settlement in 1091. The town itself was founded in 1243 by Wenceslaus I of Bohemia. Brünn was situated at the crossroads of old trade routes which joined northern and southern European civilizations. As part of the Habsburg Empire, Brünn represented the centre of the province of Moravia, where German settlers arrived in the 12th and the 13th century. Germans were, until the end of World War II, the majority population living here, alongside a minority Czech population. Brünn was destroyed in the 30 Years' War and devastated by the plague, which killed 2,000 of its inhabitants. But the city recovered and flourished again under the progressive reforms of Austrian Emperor Joseph II from 1760 to 1790, and religious tolerance was imposed. Since for centuries Germans were the majority, the town mayors were all German. In 1850, Brünn's population was 37,500, with a German majority and an efficient, successful German administration who had continually developed new and improved roads, lighted and paved streets, gas, water and sewage lines, new weaving and cloth mills, as well as a machinery industry. In 1882, Francis Yell, 1860 to 1941, the longtime German-American assistant of Thomas Alva Edison, went throughout Europe introducing the Edison light system to the various European countries. He travelled to Brünn to design and install an electric lighting in the Brünner Stadttheaters, the oldest theatre building in Central Europe and the first public building in the world to use Edison's electric lamps. Edison himself visited Brünn in 1911. Yale had participated with Edison from the first attempts to create a suitable thread for the first bulb. His tours greatly influenced many European scientists, a couple of them being Emil Rathenau, one of the greatest Edison pioneers in Europe, and Professor Giuseppe Colombo, founder of the great electrical system at Milan. Yale later wrote a book titled Reminiscences of Menlo Park. In it, he relates the following about his meeting with Emperor Franz Joseph. Quote, "In Vienna, I was invited to court by the Emperor Franz Joseph and had one of the greatest thrills of my life," Mr. Yale said. "I spoke with him in the Hofburg Palace. It was like a fairyland filled with officers of the various regiments of the old Austro-Hungarian Empire. Edison was a great man, the emperor told me. He said that when Edison invented the phonograph, he had instructed his ambassador to send him one right away. I spoke to him in German and told him about Edison and his work." Close quote. Franz Joseph was impressed, and later Mr. Yale was decorated by order of the emperor. Although Brünn's historical city centre was predominantly German, the Industrial Revolution changed the town's labour force, and the newer factories and workshops employed many Czechs who arrived daily from the suburbs. Both languages were understood in Brünn, and there were eventually families of mixed nationalities. It prospered and grew, and by 1910 Brünn had a population of 108,944. Of whom 70% were German and 30% were Czechs. Alas, policies from Versailles after World War I would soon alter and rewrite the history culture and ethnic balance of Brünn. When the Austrian monarchy was crushed after World War I, the Czechs received their own state, and with the inclusion of the Slovaks, it became known as Czechoslovakia, with Prague as its capital. A number of neighbouring communities were suddenly incorporated into the municipality of Brünn, so that Czechs would become the majority for the first time in history, and therefore Brünn's administration also became Czech. The numbers of Germans and Austrians in the border regions was about 3.5 million. In late 1918, only 160,000 Czechs had lived in those regions. A mere 20 years later, in May of 1939, official statistics numbered twice as many Czechs, or approximately 320,000, and they had been intentionally lured to these purely German regions to Czechify them. This spelled its doom. From the beginning, activist Czechs decided to create a nationalist Czech state in which Germans would be robbed of their farms, homes and businesses and resettled elsewhere. The Slovaks had also become a minority, and the rights of both minorities were soon to be trampled. In the early years of the young Czech Republic, even some Germans had been enthused by the new spirit that filled the Czech citizens, but unfortunately the two factions were overshadowed by national differences, and soon Germans had to fight to protect their ethnic installations and organisations. Hard feelings were growing in intensity, and once the shoe was on the other foot, the Germans were treated harshly and vindictively, resulting in consistent acts of violence against them. In 1938, the area was annexed to Germany. And we must note that after the Sudetenland's annexation, many of the new Czech immigrants moved back into their Czech homeland, the future protectorate, but none were forcibly expelled. Brünn's Capuchin Monastery still holds the mortal remains of Franz Freiherr von der Trenck, an adventurous Austrian soldier, born in 1711 in Reggio di Calabria to a military family and educated by Jesuits. Trenck entered the Imperial Army in 1728, but resigned in disgrace 3 years later. He married and lived on his estates until his wife died in the plague of 1737. He then offered to raise a corps of pandurs for service against the Turks, but after being refused, he entered the Russian army as a mercenary. He was accused of bad conduct, brutality and disobedience, and condemned to death for defying an order to retreat while serving against the Turks as a captain and major. Despite his insubordination, his sentence was commuted to imprisonment. Trenck returned to Austria, where his father was governor of a small fortress, but with his bad manners and surly disposition, he soon came into greater conflicts, and he had to hide in a Vienna convent. After obtaining an amnesty and a commission in a corps of irregulars, he was cited for bravery and even promoted to lieutenant colonel, and then colonel in 1744. In February 1745, he was given a reception and paid high respects by Maria Theresa in Vienna. He had captured 4,500 soldiers and non-commissioned officers, 27 officers and 9 staff officers, as well as seizing 22 guns, 7 flags, 3 mortars and 3 standards. During the War of Austrian Succession, Trenck gained fame as leader and commander of the Pandur, a paramilitary regiment of the Austrian army, which specialised in frontier warfare and guerrilla tactics. He recruited experienced Croatian and Serbian mercenaries from the Austro-Ottoman border, infamous for the civilian atrocities that they committed. During the War of the Austrian Succession, despite the fact that Trenck rallied volunteers to assist Maria Theresa, he and his irregulars had so busied themselves plundering at the Battle of Sur that the King of Prussia was allowed to escape. Court-martialed in Vienna, he was convicted of having sold and withdrawn commissions to his officers without royal permission, having breached military code, while punishing his men, and having drawn pay and allowance for fictitious men. His brutality and theft made him detested throughout Austria and Silesia. The death sentence, which followed, was commuted by the Empress, and he spent the remainder of his life in mild captivity in the fortress of Spielberg in Brünn, where he died on October 4, 1749. He bequeathed the sum of 30,000 gulden to the small town of Marienburg, which his troops had sacked and burned. Austrian Franz Freiherr von der Trenck has been reincarnated as a Czech named Frankist Svobodný Pantrenk. His mummified remains in a glass-topped coffin are on display in the crypt of Brünn, now Bruno, Capuchin Monastery. His head, like his name and his ethnicity, was stolen a long time ago and replaced with another.
You're tuned in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
After World War II, a dire circumstance developed in the town of Brünn, which the Americans had bombed heavily in March and April of 1945 to help the Red Army's forward push into German territory. As the communists closed in on Brünn, only women, children, the disabled and elderly were left of the German population of the city, the men and the older boys all being absent or dead. Sheer horror awaited these non-combatant German civilians. From his exile in London, Czech President Edward Beneš, portrayed as a heroic figure by the Allied media, urged the Czech population through the radio to arm themselves and murder Germans. Following his suggestion to take everything from the Germans, leave them only a handkerchief to weep into, and to collectively liquidate all Germans, Czechs formed vigilante groups, and by the time the Soviet army occupied the city on April the 26th, 1945, the situation had become lethal for German civilians, with gruesome and horrifying attacks. In Prague, Germans were hung head down from lampposts and set on fire as living torches in Beneš's honour. The number of victims of the genocide, which followed, has been historically cited as 250,000, but more reliable sources claim no less than 460,000. This time is referred to as the Wild expulsions, when ethnic Germans were being hunted down and murdered all over Czechoslovakia. Beneš told his audience, quote, "What the Germans have done in our land since 1938 will be revenged upon them multifold and mercilessly," close quote. And Sergei Ingor, the commander-in-chief of Czech forces who issued calls from his own exile in England, said to, quote, "Beat them, kill them, let nobody survive," close quote. Teenaged German boys were especially to be targeted. Spring came early to Brünn in 1945, and it was especially beautiful, that Easter being the loveliest anybody could remember. On April the 18th, the last of two special trains filled with Germans fleeing the city departed. By May the 30th, 1945, the 25,000 to 30,000 German women, children and elderly citizens, unable to leave Brünn in time, were driven out in a well-organised genocidal exile. This was arranged and accomplished, predominantly with the help of Czech workers of the Brünn Weapon Works. Excited and anxious for the anticipated loot and free automobiles, farms, businesses and real estate, they were supervised by Czech staff captain Bedřich Pokorný. German civilians were yanked out of their homes by force, some naked from their beds, and forced at gunpoint to assemble on the street in several parts of the city, where they were marked by an identifying mark, N for Nemec, a German. Most of the males, among them, were taken away and shot, while, flanked by armed guards, the women were indecently prodded for hidden jewellery and other items of value that they might have tried to take with them. The people were then driven out like a herd of cattle, past cheering, sneering crowds. No stopping was allowed, and the old, infirm or exhausted was simply shoved by the side of the road and shot or left to die. By the thousands, they were driven towards the remote Austrian border, without food, water or medical assistance. The majority of the deaths occurred at the first stop in the small, unprepared town of Porlitz, halfway between Brunn and the border of Lower Austria, where many people succumbed to dysentery, brought on by hunger, exposure, stress and fatigue. Some, too weak to continue, were shot on the spot. There are several mass graves there for hundreds of the victims. The sorry procession of remaining victims took 2 days to reach the Austrian border, only to find more misery once they got there. For weeks they had to vegetate in primitive camps where more of them died because the Russian troops that occupied Austria did not permit them to cross the border. According to a report published in the New York Times, the Germans were allowed to take with them no more than 500 marks, roughly $50, and a maximum of 300 kilos of luggage, but they were robbed at every step of the journey. Most ended their trek with nothing left at all. All along the way, they were taunted, tortured, robbed, raped, murdered, beaten or killed from pure exhaustion, and bodies lined the roadways. More of the dead were placed in several cemeteries on the Austrian side in single graves, and there were large mass graves in Drassenhofen, Mistelbach, Stammersdorf and Perkersdorf in Austria. There were none for those who were murdered before they even left Brunn. Brunn was not an isolated event. Komotow, now known as Chomotov, was a town in northwestern Bohemia, with 33,492 inhabitants in 1939, 90% of whom were German and had been there for centuries. The area extends north of the border, with Saxony in the middle Erzgebirge region and in the south to Egerbogen. It was populated by Germans for at least 700 years, and in 1252 it came into the possession of the Teutonic Order, who promoted its further development. German farmers from Franconia cleared the forests on the mountain slopes and cultivated the first fruit and wine in the area. Over the centuries, the land blossomed with the labour. 1396, it received a town charter, and in 1416, the knights sold both towns to Wenceslas IV. After several changes in ownership, the town purchased its freedom in 1605 and became a royal city. In 1594, it came under Habsburg rule. It had an old Gothic church, and its town hall was the former commandery of the Teutonic Knights. In the Industrial Revolution, cloth, linen and paper mills were built, and dyeing houses, breweries, distilleries and vinegar works sprouted up, and the central workshops of the railway were located here later. There were also lignite mines in the area. On June the 9th, 1945, all German male inhabitants of Komotow from 13 to 65 years of age were forced to gather at the town playgrounds. First, 15 bystanders of the assembled crowd were sorted out for protesting, and they were tortured and beaten to death on the spot. A Czech officer gave a speech saying, "Now the hour of revenge has come. But revenge shall not be practiced, just retribution." He then forced the crowd to sing Deutschland über alles, lift their arms and say in chorus, "We thank our leader." 6,000 or more people, including many aged or infirm men and young boys who had gathered, were stripped of their shirts and forced to raise their arms so that any who had been members of the SS could be found. Those with markings were tortured in a frenzied fit of sadism. Gunshots mingled with the screams of the mutilated, amplified by hysterical cursing and ecstatic laughter from the torturers. One victim was flayed and salt rubbed into his open flesh, another held while his genitals were burned with a lit newspaper. In all manner of grotesque punishments, they were eliminated one by one in front of their horrified friends and families. The head of this action was Staff Captain Prazil, who was subsequently promoted to Major. Next, The names of about 120 men who were to be employed in vital establishments, which Germans were initially required to operate, were announced and they were led away. The rest, the whole male population of the city, were marched in six columns out of town and on towards the mountainous road into their slavery, prodded by armed Czechs, who shot those who became sick or exhausted and could not continue. Soldiers with machine guns rode on trucks at the rear as the parade was driven like animals to the slaughter. The exact number of those killed in this part of the march alone is estimated at more than 70. When the first night came, several succeeded in escaping. Having no food for 4 days, the others had only grass to eat and were tormented by thirst. On they continued, resting briefly at night, and on the third day they found out what their destination was, the slave labour camp at the coal basin of Mauthern, now Zalusi, where 250 young local boys had previously been sent in the very early days after the war. After arrival, on August 10th, 1945, they were again searched for any remaining possessions. Being found with even a small piece of soap, a pencil, or especially money, met with violent abuse. The German communists and social democrats in the group were at first protected by a red armband, but they still had to work as slaves, like all the other Germans. And by September of 1945, the armbands came off. German children, from age 13, were worked as if they were adults. 15 of the group developed pulmonary tuberculosis and were shot to death. Another slave was shot in front of the whole group, when it was discovered he had cut a piece of his belt to fix the soles of his shoe. The commander used one boy as a court jester, and in a show for his guests, he put a hat on the slave's head to shoot at. In the process, the boy was shot through the head. Not quite dead, he was finished off by two shots to the heart. The slaves were subjected to daily beatings, torture sessions, and constant humiliation. After regular beatings from fists, whips, and the rubber cords, the victims had to spend hours in the blazing sun. If they passed out, salt water was squirted into the eyes of the unconscious, or their moustache or eyelashes were lit with burning matches until they came to. The guards also liked to jump on their bodies. The orgy of beatings continued until the tormentors tired from exhaustion, or those groaning in death were no longer fun, so deep was their hatred of the Germans, whose properties they had stolen. Most of the Germans did not survive the conditions in this concentration camp, although 200 to 300 lucky ones were eventually sent to eastern Germany. But by far, one of the largest planned murders of German civilians took place in the small village of Posselberg, now Posselperti, in the province of Sars, now Zetek, in Bohemia. It had been a German town since the 12th century, when the Soviet army pulled out of this newly liberated area. Soldiers of the 1st Czechoslovakian Corps moved in and mounted attacks on the region's trapped ethnic Germans, with help from civilian Czechs anxious for their anticipated real estate. On Sunday, June the 3rd, 1945, the army ordered all ethnic German non-combatant males, mostly old men and young boys in Zetek, to gather on the market square, from where they were forced to march at gunpoint to Posselporti. They were forced to run around the square and sing Nazi songs, and those who didn't run or did not know the lyrics were flogged. Then, group by group, they were led out to be methodically executed, with many being forced to dig their own graves. Hundreds of Germans who had not fled their homes were herded together on the parade ground just a month after the end of the war. First, 5 boys from ages 12 to 15 who had hidden from the revenge-seeking Czechs were discovered. They were flogged until their skin shed, and then they were shot with rifles in full view of the others who were held back at gunpoint. They did not die quickly. One of the boys who survived the initial burst of gunfire and the beating begged to go to his mother, but he was shot again, this time mortally. In the space of the following days, 1,995 more Germans were murdered in cold blood at this location. The largest mass grave, containing almost 500 bodies of males, executed in stages by soldiers with the enthusiastic backing from the local population, was later discovered in a former pheasant farm out of town. To hide their actions from the world, in August 1947, several mass graves were dug up by soldiers of Unit No. 2142 from Theresienstadt, and hundreds of bodies were removed and cremated in a top-secret operation. There is little doubt that there were many more victims whose bodies were never found. Any official documents about the events in Postelporti disappeared into the Interior Ministry archives to the relief of the post-war residents of Postelporti and Zetek, who now lived in the houses of the killed or displaced Germans with all of their possessions. There are other mass graves in Postburg for murdered Germans, 34 corpses in one, 103 corpses in two others, 4 corpses in another in Weinberg, 26 corpses in a sandpit, 349 corpses at Liwanitzer, 10 corpses in another sandpit by Kreuz, 7 corpses in one house, 225 corpses in a grave at the school, and 5 corpses at the military barracks. A Czech reporter stumbled upon this crime in the mid-90s, and with a colleague began investigating. They soon met with violent resistance and threats. Since then, there have been requests for some sort of memorial, but residents insist that if one is erected, it must be worded in such a way that the victims deserved what they got. Atrocities were committed across the land. The massacre of Osig on July 31st, 1945, occurred the day after an explosion at an ammunition depot in Krasny Brezno. Immediately, and without trying to find the guilty parties, all German civilians, who were easily recognisable from the white armlets they were forced to wear, were rounded up and drowned by a mob, using fire hoses to push them off the Elbe Bridge. Survivors were then fired at in the water. The corpses floated into neighbouring Saxony, where 80 corpses were retrieved at Meissen alone, and 117 more were found downstream. The number of the dead from this massacre was indicated for many years as approximately 2,000. The Czech records insist it was only 40 to 100. In Prerau, on June the 18th and 19th of 1945, 265 German refugees from the Upper and Unterzips, who were in a railway station, were murdered by Czechoslovakian soldiers. They had been evacuated briefly before the end of the war and wanted to return to their homeland. They ran into Czechoslovakian soldiers returning from a victory celebration in Prague. The intelligence collection officer, Karol Pazur, with his soldiers, forced the 265 defenceless civilians to leave the building and dig a mass grave throughout the night. They then had to undress to their underwear, deliver all personal objects of value, and were all shot in the neck, one by one. Besides the 71 old men and 120 women, there were 74 children among the murdered. The youngest victim was only 8 months old. The murderers were never condemned. Karol Pazur was arrested briefly, but fell under the Beenese Czechoslovakian amnesty law, which is still in effect, which allows the murdering of German civilians. He was therefore never punished.